CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto.
In a world lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for episode number 153.
2017.
We're in 2017
now. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year.
That's the whole gang here. We're broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in beautiful, rainy Toronto, Canada. But we're here warm inside. We've got the fire going. It's lovely. I think that's a fireplace. Do you want to check that out? We're here in Toronto, Canada anyway. We're streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/live-stream. Right. Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters or established professionals, we don't care. Together, we're going to share tips, techniques, and cool things found, and hopefully together, we all become a little better at writing songs. I am your host, Bruce Harrett, and joining me tonight, as always, the intrepid members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, Mr. Phil Emery.
That is me.
Mr. Neil Modi.
Good evening.
And bravely managing our social media onslaught is... Oh, it's not Vanessa.
It's not Vanessa.
It's not Vanessa. We're through the looking glass here, folks.
I thought it was Vanessa.
It's Hema.
It's Hema.
It's Hema.
It's Hema. She's like Madonna. She just has one name. Hema on. And then over here, we have Vanessa Vreeland on the board doing the technical side of the show tonight, ably assisted by Neil Modi. So that's our crew. And during the show, we want you to join in the conversation and send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the audience in real time. Hema will be handling the media for us here. Please stop by our website at SongTalk. It is songtalk.ca. It gets so confusing, doesn't it? And find out how you can be a guest on our show. Toronto-based folk pop artist Angela Saini is all about second chances and empowering others. Blog TO has mentioned her in the top five folk acts to watch. Following the release of her single Living on the Bright Side, which she will play tonight, BBC Radio called Angela Saini massively talented.
Wow.
Angela was nominated for Best Female Vocalist in Now Magazine's Reader's Choice Awards in 2015.
Ooh.
That's recent.
Wow.
And is a three-time Toronto Independent Music Award nominee.
Yowza.
With her latest single, Here I Go Again, Angela Saini shares her journey as a musician and her positive outlook, which is basically, the road may be untraveled, but you'll never know if you don't take a chance, right, and go down that road. Her live album, Live and Alive, is out now and now available. Welcome, Angela Saini.
Welcome, Angela.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah. You notice I said your name a lot there. That's so the people will remember
right.
who you are. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Angela, your name's, you have Saini. An interesting background. You were saying it's East Indian.
Yes. My dad is from Delhi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Saini's an Indian last name.
That is really
not
cool.
Italian. It could be Italian, but
I'm
Italian. Not Italian. Yeah. It could be.
Saini.
And you're from Calgary?
Yes. Originally from Calgary, Alberta. Now a Torontonian.
All right.
Yeah.
So when did you start writing songs?
The minute I learned three chords when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
remember what three chords those were?
It was probably C, G, and D.
Yeah,
maybe E minor actually, because I was really sad for.
Oh, that's right.
Throw the minor in there.
Yeah, right? E minor is important. Yeah,
for sure.
The guitar was definitely a vehicle for me to sing, because I've always been a singer, and singing is definitely my primary instrument and interest, but I love guitar because it brings out the stories that I want to tell. So.
Did you sing before you started playing guitar?
I did,
so
yeah.
You were like in,
I was always in choir, and I actually took singing lessons for 2 years and then convinced my parents to let me quit because I really hated it. But it's funny because I requested to take them, but I felt that in the process of learning, like it was a little bit too classical for me, and I always wanted to use my own voice. And I felt like my voice was kind of being changed, and I just didn't want to do... I kind of wanted to always do my own thing. So even when we had recitals in my last year singing lessons, I requested with my three chords, I wrote my first song and I was like, I don't want to sing Wind Beneath My Wings. I want to sing the song that I wrote myself. So
that's important.
I've always been obsessing over like having my own original material.
That's so important because, you know, different teachers, we were talking before the show about band members and how it's about a magic chemistry thing. And teachers is the same thing. You can have like great energy with teachers. You can have a great chemistry with teachers, and you can have ones that are just not the right fit. It doesn't mean they're a bad teacher. They're just not good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And I think, and it's tough when you just start to not know whether or not the person is for you. I had a friend who was, you know, an older person who was wanting to play drums, never played drums. So she rented some drums and she was just having fun. And the guy was just like really mean to her now, you know, because she wasn't as serious.
Whiplash.
And yeah, and that wasn't
like
really...
Like that movie? Did he throw things at
almost,
her?
Almost. Yeah. But that wasn't the reason, you know? Like, the teacher needs to understand what you want. And,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it's important to actually say that's not the right...
Yeah,
you know,
I prefer
me.
A natural voice myself, and I do admire people who have trained their voices to be so large, like very big and be able to fill a space.
Yeah.
And it is a very different sound, though. So you fired your singing teacher... You were 9 and you said, I don't want to be a classical singer, Mom.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, I was 14. And it was funny because I think there was a part of me that was, I want to say badass, but I don't know if I can say that.
Well, there
but I wanted to be in a rock band.
Yeah, well,
that was really
there is that
of the
aspect
story.
Of it because most 14-year-old people who are singing more than likely are listening to whatever they're listening to, and their first inclination is probably to imitate what they hear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? But for you to actually be a 13 or 14 saying, no, I want to actually project my own voice.
Yeah.
That's quite remarkable.
I don't know if I knew what I wanted. I think I just knew that I wanted to do my own thing.
Yeah,
and I think that's something
it, right?
that sort of traveled my whole career has sort of been that same.
So did you get another singing teacher or just continue?
I didn't.
On your own?
No, that's pretty much the same time that I, so when I turned 15, I convinced my parents to let me use my birthday money to buy a guitar. Mm-hmm. And so the first guitar I had was an acoustic, and within probably a month or two, I saved up enough money to buy an electric guitar, and that's when I started a band. Yeah, so I've been playing in, I played in a band since the age of 15, and the first show I ever played was actually at Tegan and Sarah's house. That's a funny story, if you know that act. Yeah,
wow.
They're also from Calgary. But we were playing in bars since I was about 16 years old, so I've been playing semi-professionally for a really long time. And I think what I got out of the singing lessons more than anything else was actually confidence, because my parents had never heard me sing. I was very shy. They didn't sit in any of my lessons. And when the first recital we had, which actually was Wind Beneath My Wings, which is funny, I was so nervous because my parents were there and my friends had come and I opened my mouth and nothing came out. You know that standard, horrible, worst thing that's ever happened to you?
Yeah.
That happened to me. So I think what I really got out of singing lessons was the proper way to warm up your voice and learn how to expand your range. So that definitely helped me. But really, it's definitely about confidence and being able to just sing in front of anyone other than like my two best friends, which is all I've done since that point. Yeah. Unless I was in a choir. I mean, a choir is a different thing than solo.
Were you a cover band then?
No. The funny thing is, well, we learned a few covers just like everybody does. You kind of want to learn like something you can play and perform for people that they would know. But we've started on original music really, really quick. And I'm really lucky because I found similar-minded people as me really young. And the two guys I started with that rock band with ended up being in that band for 10 years. And they're the same guys I moved to Toronto with. So we were really committed.
Wow.
Really, really dedicated to music. So I'm really lucky that
That's
I had
rare.
That experience. It is rare. And especially when you're really young. So I'm really lucky for that.
There's a special bonding when in bands that happen between people when they, you know, they kind of marry because it's not, you know, it's not a romantic connection, but it's still, there's this very intimate thing. Mm-hmm. And actually that's why when bands break up, it's the same dynamic as when you break up with a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's nasty, like when you run into them like 5 years later, you want to be able to say, I've just been signed, and you want them to be really bad.
You're speaking for yourself, are they?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely a relationship. And I think we were talking before the show about how sometimes people, it's not just all about the music when you play with people in a band. It's chemistry and personality and goals and motivations.
Yeah.
And, I've had quite the history playing with different drummers because that was the one piece that kind of rotated a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen a lot of different attitudes and commitment to their art or commitment to a certain project. And everyone has their own way they want to play music, and there's no right or wrong answer.
Were,
right?
Were you co-writing with your bandmates?
Yeah. We did a lot of actually, it's more of co-writing, almost like a post-production sort of thing. So very often I would come in with a song. I usually wrote on acoustic late at night, and I would funnel the songs into my band. The bass player also did quite a bit of writing, and I would usually put the vocals and the melody and the lyrics over it.
Mm-hmm.
The guitarist would come in, and he would add, like, the cool sprinkles, almost like the icing on the cake kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely was a collaborative effort, although the birth of each song was probably kind of done not in a rehearsal space, kind of came to the band, just like a lot of bands. Like, someone kind of has the birthing of the song,
yeah,
and then it goes from there.
Yeah, yeah, I found this often the better way to work, is if you just, I mean, sometimes something magical can happen from just a bunch of people getting in a room and jamming,
mm-hmm.
But you got to be able to pull out those nuggets and kind of work with it and make something happen with it.
But sometimes that's really fun, too. I find that in a songwriting sense, because I did that with the band kind of morphed into a different band a little bit later as I came to Toronto, and I played synth in that band, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
To, because I'm not really a piano player. I faked it so well.
and
we wrote an entire album like that, because I was learning, I did a lot of melody kind of things on the keys, and I wrote the lyrics and the melodies, but we did a lot of jamming and came up with songs that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the drummer had actually a lot to do with that band. That was more of an electro rock band with me on a synth, my voice still. And so I feel that as a songwriter, though, I'm very obsessed, especially nowadays, with the theme and an idea and a concept of a song. And sometimes, and that's me as a songwriter really being like, well, what's the song about? And sometimes that's where I start. So it's not this cool riff, like, that's cool, but then what are we going to write it about? That, for me, has been kind of a frustration, because I kind of like to start right away with, like, what am I trying to say?
Jamming is a very different process, because you come up with something. In some ways, it's great because it's very representative of the band.
Mm-hmm.
But which is great. But it's a very different approach, because you have this song that kind of comes out, and then you have to kind of put stuff on top of it after it's done.
Like a top liner almost.
Yeah,
and that's something I think that was sort of more difficult for me, because I was the song was almost already fixed, and then it's like, okay, great, now what do I do? And then you're sort of, for me, that's almost working backwards.
Yeah, you're kind of cramming in words in places.
Yeah, and like, okay, well, now, you know, this chorus has so many bars, and now the whole idea has to fit into this little piece that, like, this little cookie cutter we've created for the song. So as someone who's sort of obsesses over what's the idea and themes, that was a bit more of a frustrating thing for me. I think the music we made was cool.
Yeah. Did you ever come to the band with a very strong idea, and then through the process of everyone kind of tweaking and this and that and the other, the idea kind of really morphed on you?
Yes. Sometimes I would win out in what I really thought in my own mm-hmm. stubborn way, and sometimes it would morph into something that I kind of was like, too many cooks in the kitchen. That's just maybe the way that was going at the time. And sometimes I'd be like, wow, that's totally not what I heard, but this is super
this
cool.
Is great. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. So it could go any
way.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
So
yeah.
What theme did you start with? Something like I'm Beautiful?
That's a really interesting song. A lot of people sometimes, you know, with songwriting, there's so many different ways to write a song. So some people say, oh, I start with music and then I write lyrics, or start with lyrics and then write music, et cetera. How long does it take? And this is a song that I wrote in 20 minutes flat, and it just like poured out of me. And I always point back to this song when I talk about songwriting, just because it sort of, it's that one anomaly, because I've never had another song like that just poured out.
Mm.
When you hear the song, it's obviously going to be sort of reflective of how I was feeling at the time, but it's super honest, and I went back. I didn't do a lot of editing on the song. I did record it with a producer in 2013, and we went over some of the lyrics a little bit, but not a lot was changed, and I'm glad that we really captured what I was, what I felt.
Would mm-hmm. you do it for us now?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
All right.
So, let's go with Something Like I'm Beautiful. This is Angela Saini.
see past my own gloom. Crow's feet walking all over my face. My mirror hates me today. Blue jeans feeling too tight. Lifeless hair can't get it right. Feels like no one has called me in a year. Only thing I need to hear, if I ask you, will you tell me something like I'm beautiful? I've wanted you to tell me, and I promise I'll believe you, that I'm not a dime in a dozen, that everything about me is worth loving. Tell me something like I'm beautiful. Deep scars are on display. Feel like a duck when I walk away. Reaching for a better place. Only frowns in this headspace. It's getting harder to believe that there might be nothing wrong with me. When you're feeling ocean blue, there's nothing left to do but to ask you, will you tell me something like I'm beautiful? I've wanted you to tell me, and I promise I'll believe you, that I'm not a dime in a dozen, that everything about me is worth loving. Tell me something like I'm beautiful. I found myself on the cold, hard ground, awake in a dream and I can't get out. The hardest thing to grasp is a helping hand. Only I can let myself feel this bad. If I ask you, will you tell me something like I'm beautiful? I've wanted you to tell me, and I promise I'll believe you, that I'm not a dime in a dozen, that everything about me is worth loving. Tell me something like I'm beautiful. Tell me something like I'm beautiful. Oh, tell me something like I'm beautiful. Tell me something like I'm beautiful.
Wow, beautiful. Talk about beautiful. And that was something like I'm Beautiful, written and performed by Angela Saini. And you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. What a gorgeous, gorgeous song.
Thank you.
Nice.
And
beautiful. Lots of nice little bits in there.
Little details.
Little tasty bits. Neil, do you want to lead the charge?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked, I mean, like you said it right off the top. This is honest, it's earnest. And it's stunningly clear in that regard. Like it just kind of hits you in that emotional way, right? Mm-hmm. And I imagine, and just by the phrases and the way that you're telling this, you're expressing this emotion, I think it's done in such a way that a lot of people can read a lot of themselves into it, right? Mm-hmm. So as much as it may have came from a personal space for you, you've actually done it in such a way that it's easily approachable and easily understood and easily embraced by anybody.
Thanks.
And anyone can really take it in for themselves and feel the same things within themselves.
Thank you.
So yeah, I really like that about it.
I'll be honest, I've had people start bawling when I play that song.
No, I can totally see that.
And there's
totally
something as a songwriter, you're really happy when people really are touched by something, and you're like, I don't want to be happy that you're crying, but I'm kind of a little bit happy that you're crying.
Well, you connected. That's certainly when people can relate that way. I love the image of burnt toast as gloomy, you know, that kind of burnt toast smell. Crow's feet walking all over my face. You've got some lovely imagery, and that came to you in a flash is quite something. I always feel when people say that this song came to me in 20 minutes, they're not mentioning the 10 years before when they were writing.
Yeah, it's true.
Exercising the creative muscle, building the capacity for metaphor, simile, and image. And so it's going to come. It comes out of somewhere, but it comes out of a lot of experience. And it feels like it. I had one suggestion. What we usually say in our songwriting roundtable is, if you asked me to help you rewrite this, is I would shorten the second verse section, which is really two verses back to back right at the start. So I would come out of the chorus right into one of those verses, like deep scars are on display, feel like a duck when I walk away. That feels as a repetition of what you set up at the beginning. I would go right to, it's getting harder to believe there might be nothing wrong with me when you're feeling ocean blue, there's nothing else left to do. So you're bang back into the chorus more quickly is where I wanted to go.
You're actually suggesting just cut those four lines entirely?
Yeah, cut the first half of the second verse. And then go right in. And then I loved the fact that you went to a bridge so beautifully, and I loved how you went to the bridge. I don't think we've ever had anybody go right to feel this bad. And then just feel this bad, and then you're just saying it, and there's a big tacit there, right? Just everything's gone, and you just let that moment hold with a lot of – it takes a lot of nerve to stay in a silence like that. For a beat. But I love the technique of this is interpretation of how you delivered the song, right? Let myself feel this bad. And it trailed off to just a tiny little voice, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is like,
no, that's probably where people really started crying at that point, right? And you built to your final. And the only other thing I would do if we were to rewrite this song is I think on your repetitions of tell me something like I'm beautiful, I think I would replace maybe some chords underneath that were new and surprising.
Well, I think you did that, though.
Yeah, you did some of that. You did a little bit of the bridge chords under. You put an A in there, right, under that repetition.
There's an A in there somewhere. Yeah.
I think I would play with some variety, let it go a little loose, more loose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with that, actually, because there was a bit of – I think there was just enough a variety, actually, because the repeats were kind of different. I mean, I love the fact that it was a very strong chorus. I mean, it's like you didn't do a fifth sort of jump, you know, to make the chorus bigger. But it's real clearly that it's the chorus. It's clear what the name of the song is, which I thought was really great. And one thing you did, which is really something I've always played around with. And wondered is you put a variation on the chorus melody, which you did on the third chorus. The first something I'm beautiful. I think you did a slightly different melody, a variation, which I always liked.
Nice.
And I always wonder if you're supposed to, like, I've always played around with that. Do you do that on the second chorus or on the third chorus?
You know, when it is.
But because you actually did that variation on the last chorus, when you did repeat the tell me something I'm beautiful, I think that kind of gives enough of the variation. Like, to me, it didn't feel like it was too long. So I thought that was good. Interesting rhyme schemes too. They're not perfect rhymes, or they're not tight.
It's funny. I only noticed that like a year after I wrote that song, and I was wow, this doesn't rhyme at all. But in my head, it mostly does.
They're softer rhymes because you're just rhyming the vowel sound without rhyming the final consonant sound, right?
It's funny when you, as a performer, I'm so conscious of it now. Like, even when I was just playing, I'm like, that doesn't rhyme at all. It's just really funny that I totally didn't notice. And I'm glad. It's almost like a happy accident, because I think if I was super aware of it when I wrote the song, I probably would have tried to change something about it.
And that's just it. Had this song gone with a lot of perfect rhymes, it wouldn't have come across – it would come across a little bit kind of kitschy and not terribly earnest. You know what I mean? Because the edges on this song are very, very soft. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing very harsh about it. There's nothing kind of it's kind of gentle.
But your rhymes are strong in your verses, like room gloom, face today, tight right, year here. But then when you get to the chorus, it's not so rhymey, which is a nice shift. You know, one of the things that's really cool about well-written songs is that the chorus is very different in a number of ways from the verse, not just melodically in terms of chord progressions, but also in rhyme and sometimes in feel. And I think you accomplished that.
Yeah, so, I feel like I did that by accident, which is really funny. Cause,
I would
like,
say I it's even, by education and experience.
Yeah, like and something accident. Like I'm beautiful and I promise I'll believe you. And I'm like, that doesn't rhyme at all. Like,
doesn't
it's funny
to.
How, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, it totally works.
But it totally worked. In my brain, I think I thought it rhymed, and then later on I was like,
That's actually another way that you've differentiated the chorus, because your verse is actually more rhymey than your chorus is.
Yeah.
So in some ways, your chorus is kind of, it's almost the understated part in some ways, but it's certainly still a lift. I really, really like the bridge.
Cool.
Because it's a nice little shift there, and especially since you got a chorus before and a chorus after, a bridge is kind of good. But as well, like lyrically, you went to a slightly different place. Like, I really like the last two lines. The hardest thing to grasp is a helping hand. I could see people crying at that line. Mm-hmm. Only I can let myself feel this bad. Like that's an amazing line to end the bridge on.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the bridge, the chorus almost kind of reads slightly differently, right? That it's a little bit more affirming somehow.
Can you tell for the listeners at home what your chords were in the song? Like what key you're in and what you did differently on the bridge?
For this song, I can. It starts on E major. Then I play an A and then a B. Mm-hmm. That would be the intro and the verse. And then the chorus would be A, B, C sharp minor, and then an E major. And then that's all the chords in the song, and then the bridge starts on the C sharp minor.
So you use the same chords in the bridge, just in a different order.
Yeah, there's no new chords there. Exactly.
Because some people, how do you feel about that? Do you generally bring in new chords on a bridge, or not necessarily?
It depends. I like to try something different in a bridge most of the time. I'll try to be like, oh, what have I not used yet? That's something that I always think of. Didn't work out for this song. Yeah.
Well, we always talked about that. Like, you don't have to necessarily change everything. If you change, because I think in this bridge, I mean, lyrically it's different. I think rhythmically it's a little bit different.
The melody is different. This chord just sounds tragic. Like, when I go to it, it sounds like sad. Like, it's, you know, so it kind of makes sense for that.
And you probably wouldn't want that much of a variation, actually,
this
kind of a song anyways. Yeah, by going to, because is this in G?
That's a great question. I would say it's in...
It's an E or A.
It's
an A. Yeah, so if you went like to a relative minor or you know, a six for the bridge, that would probably be too much of a change. Because it is kind of a very
What chord are you going to for the bridge? I
missed that. It's a C sharp minor.
You are going to the minor. So your verse and your chorus are both major, starting on a major, and then your bridge is starting on a minor.
That's why it sounds so tragic.
That's why it sounds... Yeah. It's always that first chord that sounds different. You can still wrap around the same chord you used before, but as long as your starting chord is something you haven't started a section with before, then it'll give enough of a difference.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, no, it's a great tune. It's quite hooky too, which is.
I really thought at the end you were going to leave us hanging, and not resolve the chord, but then you left a bit of a gap. And I was actually glad that you resolved it. You most of the time I'm with songwriters, I leave it hanging. It's kind of cool, but for this song, I think you need to.
Sometimes it's fun to leave it hanging. I think it depends. It's almost like there's so much tension in the song, like just in the emotional aspect.
I kind of want to
it's going to be okay.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It resolves. Yeah.
No, there was something that in my head, and I was playing around with one that I heard at the end of your chorus, and I'm not sure if it would actually be kind of cheesy, but tell me something like, and then a bit of a beat. I'm beautiful. That might be too. I don't know.
Yeah, you have an option to play around with the legato effect, like in the scan of those lyrics on that line, which might be something to play with when you're in performance. We just have to take a bit of a station ID right now over to Phil.
Oh, that's right. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce Neal and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. And tonight, our guest is Angela Senni. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. Senni. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, and we will share your thoughts in real time, and you can be famous just like us. And you can always find the links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have January 10th, Paul Voss; January 17th, Kirk Felix; and January 24th, which is my birthday, and I take a medium shirt or a large shirt. I prefer blue and black.
I'll give you the same thing I gave you last year.
Well, it fits. Ashley Braga, if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at the very first Songwriters Roundtable meetup of 2017. On Sunday, January 22nd, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club at Bloor West in Spadina area. Yeah. It's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all those juicy details. Back to you, Brucey.
Yes. Well, by the way, the Brunswick House, the famous Brunswick House,
yes,
they've done a complete refurbishment of the outside. I don't know if it's closed.
Oh, really?
But they've done a complete cleanup and painting. It looks beautiful.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
I don't know if they're going to do the inside, too, but maybe.
Maybe.
Oh, wow.
We'll start somewhere, right?
Yeah, well, that's our neighborhood there, Brunswick and Bloor, the Transact Club. That's coming up on Sunday. So just before we carry on with our next song here, I just want to ask you guys, Neil and Phil, what are your plans for 2017 musically? I know, Neil, you're in a band. You're on a bit of a hiatus right now, are you?
Yeah, we're on a bit of hiatus because our lead singer-songwriter is out of country. So we're out of commission for about a month. But maybe he'll come back with a bunch of freshly written songs. We'll have something new to go on. But other than that, yeah, we're just working on, you know, getting more gigs, getting more of a following, getting more fans.
That's Beige Shelter.
Beige Shelter is the name of the band.
And I hear you've got, there's a really cool video up on YouTube now. How would people get to that?
The Beige Shelter video?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Just go to youtube.com/Beige Shelter.
Beige as in the color.
Yeah, Shelter. And the first single is called Dark Horse, and it's, we shot that video back in October.
Yeah.
Had Renegade Films, shoot that video for us.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Yeah.
Very,
really
nice. Very professional, and the tune is great. You guys sound great. So you're going to continue in that same vein with the band. It's a part-time effort for everybody.
Of course.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Phil, are you going to reform your band from the 90s?
Well, from the 90s? That was a couple of bands ago.
Okay. What are your musical plans for
Year? I'm going to be moving in March, and I'm going to actually be in a place that has a full basement.
Oh, nice.
Which means, yes, of course.
Jam space.
Yeah.
So I had to move my business into my home office, which was also my music office. So that's been kind of weird because I've had all my music stuff and my work stuff and same plus. And that's been kind of a little bit distracting. So it's going to be nice to have them separated and be able to have all my stuff out in the basement.
Is it like a finished basement?
It is.
Great.
With the wood paneling.
Oh,
just like in the 70s, you know.
Oh,
so,
I love that.
Yes. Yeah. So just so that's going to be fun.
Is it shag carpet?
Orange or brown?
I don't think so. No. I only saw it the one time, but it's it's very exciting. But
so you'll be able to play and record down there.
Yes. I mean, I record in my office, but it's nice to have that kind of separation. That kind of separation for me is very important. But I was actually over the Christmas holidays. I spent some time actually just kind of working on some songs and
nice.
And before I'd always buy myself a toy. Around Christmas, I buy like a guitar pedal or a new piece of software. But this year, I decided just to explore all the stuff I have.
Yes.
And looked at an old piece of software and just, it's actually an old version of Kontakt. It's not even a.
Oh, wow.
And man, you can do a lot with it. And I think that's the key is to stop buying new stuff and just learn
just
what you
just
have.
Learn and use what you got, yeah.
Yeah, because you can, right now, we all have more stuff that was in the average studio back in the 70s.
If the Beatles could do it with all that old technology.
Yes, I think we can do it too, you know? So, how about you?
And Bruce, what are you doing in the new year? Well, I'm not really sure. Musically, the one thing that I have a yearning for is to play music with other songwriters. So we have the round table where you get up and you do a song, you get feedback, right? And we have the radio show where people come in and play and we give some feedback. I would like just, I call it a songwriter's jam. I'm going to just throw one of those, probably at the Transact Club, and see what happens. It means anybody who's a songwriter who plays an instrument, guitar, uke, harmonica, piano, comes, and they play their song, and they invite everybody to join in. So certainly, if Neil came, he'd have his...
Cajones.
Cajones, the little cone box thing, or shakers. And I've done that. When I lived in Victoria, we had a group of us that used to do that. We called them house concerts. But basically, we all get together, and we'd play together in an improvisational. And the last thing I want to say is the most astounding thing I ever saw was in Victoria. It was a woman who was the lead bass player for the Victoria Symphony Orchestra playing a duet with a guy who I know, a friend of mine, Stuart, playing the penny whistle.
Oh, very cool.
Nice.
Never met before, and they're playing string bass and penny whistle.
Nice.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for those kind of mashups to happen in
That's
the new
fun.
Year.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is some blues, there's various jams around that I know.
They're a house band, and you get to go on and play your guitar, kind of. And I'm not proficient enough to do that.
Yeah.
And they don't know my song, usually. Yeah. Like, I'm intimidated by these house bands, like, because they're just like, yeah, okay, well, what key is it in? I'll go, I don't know. Yeah, that's not very helpful, is it? So I'm just thinking of something low-key, semi-professional. Mm-hmm. Just play your tune, and people can join in on lead or whatever. So I'll definitely promise to do that at Transact.
Yeah. That's really common with folk music, too, those kind of jams where everybody just
song
like...
Song circle.
Yeah, like, oh, and then they'll throw it to you, and then someone will play a solo and then throw it to you. I was in Kansas City for Folk Alliance 2 years ago. And it was just a stairwell filled with like 100 people, so many different instruments, and everyone, and I don't even know whose song they were playing, but it went on for like 20 minutes and we were trapped in the stairwell, which was probably very unsafe, like in
a
fire.
Fire. That's actually a great title for a song.
Yeah.
Trapped in the stairwell.
Yeah. But it was like the best thing ever. I filmed it all and it was the coolest thing. So I think that's really great. Just, you know, play a song. And
will you come?
Sure.
Okay,
I'm not as great as like improvising, like, you know, I don't know all the scales or whatever, but I'm really great at shakers and I can actually play drums. I didn't say that earlier, but
you can sing along on the chorus.
Absolutely. I'm good at harmonizing too. I can do that. Yeah. I play a mean tambourine actually. That rhymes.
Actually, well, you know, there's a guy who played in the Funk Brothers who played all the on the classic Motown songs, and actually all he played was the tambourine. And if you listen to those old classic Motown stuff without the tambourine, it's nothing.
Yeah, tambourine's
and that's
very
all
underrated.
He was this big guy, and he played this little tambourine, but that's all he played. And it's like, he was great.
Yeah.
Back to the feel thing. Like, some people think, oh, how hard is that? But, like, if you don't have the feel, like...
Oh, yeah. And I tried putting that on a couple of tracks in the past, and it's a lot harder than it looks.
So, why don't we hear another song? You may have another song called Living on the Bright Side for us, possibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I do.
There's a good segue.
Yeah.
So we're gonna hear another song, and from Angela Saini. Saini, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Angela Saini. She's gonna sing "Living on the Bright Side."
I've never owned a poncho. Whenever it rains, I only see a rainbow splashing through the puddles, knowing that's how green grass grows. Only sun comes through my window. It's cold and the car won't start. Must be a great day for a walk. I'm living on the bright side. I'm living on the bright side. Mind. its side. It's my state of mind. When a bulb burns out, I see. Even in the dark, it feels sunny to me. Skipping in the shadows, every corner holds beauty. There is always light if you look closely. My train home is 3 hours late. Guess there's time for another piece of cake. I like chocolate.
Angela Sato singing Living on the Bright Side, written by Angela Sato and Tony Gehr. And you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. Phil, what did you think?
I liked it. And I see that on your lyrics you got, it was mastered by Phil at the Lecter Channel, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I know Phil.
Phil Dimitro.
Yes, hi
How
Phil.
Did you know that?
Hi
yeah.
Phil.
Yes. Yeah, love Phil.
Yeah, I know he's good. He did a bit on one of my stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a great. One thing I liked about your songs is very clear what the song is called.
Mm-hmm.
It's always really important for me. It's like the titles are never hidden, which I thought was really good. It's really neat. The chorus is very odd.
How so, Phil?
Well, it says, poison tastes so good on my tongue.
The bridge.
Oh, that's the bridge.
Bridge.
Yeah.
Isn't that what I said?
You said the chorus.
Chorus. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
He meant the bridge.
Which was a very odd thing to say.
No, I'm sorry. Well, I've got a migraine at the moment. So but it says, poison tastes so good on my tongue, enjoying life. I've only got one.
Mm-hmm.
That's
curious.
That's
it's a little left field. Yeah.
It's yeah.
Left
yeah.
Field.
What's the poison about?
I think it's the whole idea is a little bit of like you only live once. That's kind of the idea in the bridge there. It's not like a secret message of like, you know, a vice of any kind.
Right.
It's interesting because the song it came out during an ice storm. I know which one. It was the ice storm. So my tour van had died. Oh. And we had, you know, there was no power. It was around Christmas that wasn't actually that Christmas one, but it was that year. And I hadn't seen the sun in like 2 weeks and I was feeling super low, and I'm a prairie girl. So I get really like a little bit seasonally affected here. Mm-hmm. And I was just super down and my tour van had just died. And this song came out, which is interesting because it's totally like a positive song, but it came out of a really, really bad place. And Tony Gehr, the co-writer on this, he actually helped out on the chorus because I had a different chorus chord progression before. I wish I could tell you what it was, but I don't remember now. So he kind of that's how he kind of collaborated with me on this, helping me rewrite the chorus with the melody.
The lyric was always the same. In
the lyric was all The lyrics was all me, and the chorus chords are almost the same because it started still on. Well, geez, the capo screws up everything, but it'd be G, capo 4, whatever that is. But the chord was the same, but the melody changed, and that was a bit of his suggestion, was to have that sort of high note that goes over.
Yeah, that's totally the whole
I think that's what really added to the song, so I'm really glad for his contribution on this, for sure, because I can't even remember what I had before. But anyway, so back to, I guess, what you said. The song is definitely a positive spin, and I always, when I introduce the song live, I always talk about how... it's kind of my mantra in life. I'm generally a really positive person. And so it's sort of like this horrible. And so obviously in the lyrics, it's like these bad things that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, in the pre-chorus, it's like, these are all things that happened to me. Like the car won't start and like train is late and things like that happened to me on my last tour.
I really like all the little dualities. You know what this song reminded me of? It reminded me of Alanis Morissette's Ironic.
Oh, cool.
But,
okay.
But this is like if she did Ironic properly.
Like if it was
then
ironic.
Then
yeah.
Like this, right?
I liked actually the opening line. I never owned a poncho.
Yeah, it's a weird, it kind of gets your attention.
It's really neat. And I've always felt that if you have an opening, a great opening line, then everything else will kind of fall in place.
Cool, thanks.
But I really thought that was really neat just because I don't think I've ever heard a song start off with, I never owned a poncho.
Yeah.
A few people have said that. They're like, I never have heard the word poncho in a song.
Is that true?
Like, that I've never owned a poncho?
Yeah.
That is true.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A poncho. Does it count if you buy those little bags that, like, at Niagara Falls? Is that a poncho?
I think that's a poncho.
I think that's a poncho.
It's temporary.
So,
it's temporary.
It's temporary.
You never owned that one.
I never owned it.
You just owned it.
So I think that's still true.
I suppose you could
my mom bought it for me. My parents were visiting, and it was wet, and so.
Yeah, I mean,
it's still true.
So it's okay to lie in a song. It's perfectly allowed.
If you had said I'd never been gifted a poncho, that might be
then I would be lying.
But I think owning it's fine. So it is a truthful song.
Okay, great. I'm glad to know that. The authenticity is still there. It's important to me.
What did you think of Living on the Bright Side?
I absolutely loved it. I actually heard you perform this one at Corner Hall that time. And this is the song that made me want to invite you on the show.
Cool.
because it's super catchy. I love the little dualities. I mean, despite it being a poncho, like right off the bat, I've never owned a poncho. Whenever it rains, I only see a rainbow. Like it's extraordinarily clear what this song is about right off the bat.
Yeah, it's true.
Right, you're totally setting it up in a great way. I actually really like the pre-chorus. Lyrically, it kind of reads the same way as the verse, but it still adds that melodic interest and the little bit of change there. And then the chorus hits, and it's just gorgeous, right? I mean, I was listening to the song earlier today, this afternoon, before we came on the show, and I had the chorus going through my head.
Cool. You know,
this is totally an earworm all day long. I love the little bit at the end of the chorus where it's my state of mind, the little walk down the guitar.
Cool,
and stuff. It's a great little thing. You did on the second verse. This is kind of a technical thing. You kind of even in the dark. You put the you went even in the dark.
Even in the
I would just be careful about articulating the words. With the emphasis on the right syllable.
There's a theory that you should sing as you would say it, but that people break it all the time. Like
yes,
I think
they
did beauty as well. There was some other lyric where it was not how you would normally say it. What's your take? Do you worry about that? Look for the scan.
I only think of it. It comes up a lot with working with producers. That's when it usually comes up. Mm. I'm very, rhythm is super important to me, and obviously melody. So that when I think about when I'm writing, say like the top line, doing the melody, I often think in terms of rhythm before I think in terms of even what the words are.
Yeah.
So that's how I thought of it before. So that's where I get myself into those troubles where sometimes it's not like proper.
In this instance, I think it's really just it's a simple little tweak of just shifting it by like an eighth note, this
or
way,
maybe even
way.
Articulation
and just
right?
articulating it, just putting the downbeat in an eighth note here. An eighth note there, and it falls into place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, I didn't really feel that. Like, it didn't feel out of place to me. You mean like the even part?
Yeah,
it didn't feel
it's
out of place.
It's just that Yeah, it
stands out. It's a very small detail.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a small detail, and it stands out for me because I really listen to the lyric. And I like, in the sense of a story is a way of communicating, rather, a song is the way to communicate a message to someone through words and melody and chords, that why force the listener to try to figure out what the word is? It's like a lot of younger singers now are using some strange accent. Shawn Mendes is the one that comes to mind. I don't know what that accent, if it's Scarborough or something, but he's pronouncing normal words in a way I've never heard before,
yeah.
And they're not really the way you would normally speak.
Right.
And Blair has talked about that. Yes. It's his pet peeve.
But people have always done that. I mean, I was in a band with a guy from Toronto, and he sounded like he was from Britain because he loved Depeche Mode. But I mean, that's a style, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, the Beatles sounded like they were American, not because they couldn't sound like they're from Liverpool, but the fact is they grew up listening to American rock and roll, and that's what they wanted to sound like.
But did the Beatles change the meter or the emphasis in a word in order to make it fit? Not that I can remember.
That's a good question.
Whether you choose to fix it or when a producer brings it up, you say, yeah, I know, but I like it.
I think it depends on the song.
Yeah.
It's funny because Pat Pattison, I did one of his songwriting classes, and he talks about that too. And he brings up Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the song? Now I'm going to ruin it because I'm trying to tell the story. But he was talking. What's the one of their big? Oh, they had so many things.
Rumors or go your own way.
It's the
Rhiannon.
Something about rain. Washing. Only happens when it's raining.
Happens when it's raining. Players only love you when they're playing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there's a line in there. The word is washes. Anyway, yeah. So Pat Pattison talks about
washes.
Yeah, washes. That just brings that to mind.
Yeah.
Because he
that
was.
Worked.
And that's the thing, because he was saying, why didn't they just go washes, how you would do it? And I remember watching, you know, because it was like a web thing that I did through Berkeley, and I was like, no, that would have changed the whole song.
That's
like,
one of the hooks.
Yeah, washes, like, it's part of the, you know, and so if you're proper about it, I mean, I totally get that, and he had a really good point, but when you go back and you look at this huge iconic song and you're like, well, if they would have done it, would it have been the same? So that's just brought to mind.
You always have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I think it does depend, but you're right. Like,
a songwriter has the license to reinvent language like poets do, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely you can. It's just if nothing else in the song is doing that and that word is doing that, you wonder if that was on purpose or not.
Yeah. Right.
It could be.
Yeah.
We're just exploring here, right? So for our listeners out there, when you're singing your song, if the only way you can get the word in is to mispronounce it or put the accent on the wrong syllable, then if it doesn't sound good to you, change it. And if it does, you may have something that breaks through.
That's
intention.
Yeah. I think it's a rhythm thing. Like I was saying before, do. That's how I hear it. And to change it would have been like, I don't know how I would have even done it, but it would have changed the rhythm for me.
No, that's an interesting question. Does that mean that, because I've been in this situation too, because I write songs completely backwards. I do everything, like all the arrangements, the solos, and the mixes, and my lyrics are, it's the back, you know, because that's just how I write, because I'm a terrible lyricist. So I have to kind of plug words in there. And I'm always wondering if you get to that point, does that mean that line is not right yet? Should you actually go back on that line and just go over it and try to find the words that fit into that place? Or do you push them
sometimes
in?
Sometimes I do that.
Yeah.
I write based on how many syllables I need.
Yeah.
I've totally written that way.
Because
I have the melody and then I go, okay, I need. In co-writes, we do that. It's hilarious because I'm always the one who'll say, and then people look at me like, and I'm like, okay, we have seven syllables.
Yeah,
I know.
And I've written that way. And I think that it's funny. I'm glad we're because I've actually never realized how obsessed with rhythm I am. Now I'm realizing, like, oh, no, because that's actually how I write.
Yeah.
I do write lyrics first and sometimes fit it in, but sometimes it's all about, like, that. Like, I hear what it's going to, what the melody is before there's even the lyric.
I mean, for myself, I've done that many times previously, where I've given the trump card to rhythm and to melody, and if the syllable ends up on the wrong accent, then so be it, right? And I've actually not even deliberately, but if it's that way, it's that way, right? But I think, I mean, just being on this show, and especially Bruce bringing it up time and time again about, you know, you should saying it like you say it. So,
well, you could.
You could.
It's
but
not a rule.
It's not a rule. But for the most part, recently, if I do find myself in that jam, I'll either rewrite the lyric or I'll just shift the melody, the beginning of that melody or wherever that melody falls. It's usually just a minor tweak. It's a little bit before or it's a little bit after the beat and it falls into place.
Yeah, but the hooks and the things that make they are those minor tweaks.
Well, no, yeah, and that's the difference. Like the Fleetwood Mac song, it was clearly the hook. So you don't want to fuss with it, right? In this instance, it was the second line of the verse. There's nothing melodically there that's critical to the song.
Yeah, well, Washez also was an onomatopoeia, whatever they call it, where shh is the sound of Washez.
Yes.
Right?
It worked in terms
of one of those things that sounds like it looks. But what we're talking about here is something Neil talks about often, which is the tension between what the listener is expecting and what you give them. So sometimes when you do something like that, they're expecting you to sing it like you would normally hear it, and then you don't, and now they're interested, right? So I think this, and Neil, you often talk about, well, they think I'm going to go with, you know, I'm going to go with a key change on my final chorus, probably I'll do some sort of thing to lift. I'm going to go down. And some of our writers have done that. Surprise!
Yeah.
So it's like you have expectation, expectation.
And Angela actually did that in the first song where your chorus was actually understated compared to your verse, right?
Right.
So it was a bit of a twist. Very
and
cool.
We're running out of time, it looks like. Here.
Oh, again.
I could talk for hours.
I wanted to go back to the poison thing because I don't think we resolved
that
anyway.
That's interesting.
We'll do that at the bar after.
I hope you'll come back and visit us again.
Yeah, this was super fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guest, Angela Saini.
Thank you.
Awesome stuff.
Yes, lovely, beautiful song. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, by email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Also, subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter. There's a brand new one out there now. Yes?
That's right.
At songtalk.ca. Yes, Phil?
We just got an email in from Mike. From the show. I think the song you're thinking of is Dreams from the Rumours album.
Yes, yes. That's it.
Of course Mike would know
you.
That.
Thank you.
Mike knows everything.
So if you're in the Toronto area, please join us for our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Thursday, December... Oh, no, that's wrong. On Sunday... this is a save as script. On Sunday, January 27th. Is that correct? From 1 to 4?
That is correct.
Sure, sounds good.
22nd. Yes, thank you.
It's on the webpage.
It's on the webpage.
Yes.
I can't look after all the details, you know.
Well...
No, I try.
It's only for those people who have access to the internet.
It's
you know?
At the Transact Club. It's free to join on Meetup, free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details there. We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM for over 3 years of access to their...
Happy New Year, CJRU.
Airwaves.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael, and to Alyssa and the gang. Thanks, Vanessa, for handling the board.
All right, Vanessa.
Great job on the tech.
And thank you very much for Hema for
thank
helping
you,
out
thank
on
you,
our
Hema.
Social media. She has dropped in to help us tonight. And we just met her on the street, actually, and she said she wanted to do it. But she's welcome anytime. And, of course, thank you, home
listeners. I think
listeners.
She likes Neil.
Wherever you are.
Met her on the street. I even married her.
Hey, I'm trying to finish the show, guys. home listeners, wherever in the world you are, if you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at...
At Mondo Art.
Phil at...
V. Phil Emery.
Vanessa at...
Sunny_Vanessa.
And Angela Saini at...
On Twitter is Angela Saini.
Angela Saini, it's easy.
Just my name. S-A-I-N-I. I know. I got in there early.
I'm going to spell it S-A-I-N-I.
Yes.
Thank you.
And don't follow me. It makes me nervous. Be sure to stop by our informative and entertaining website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you too could be a guest on our show. Bye for
you
now.
You too is going to be a guest on our show?
Woo-hoo! Soon. We've invited them. We're just waiting to hear back. Good night.
Good night,
everyone.
That's a great show for 2017, guys.
Yeah.
The best one of the year.
Yeah, I think so.
Right?